We're going to be talking with Robert Wofford. He is one of three candidates running for school board in District 3. District 3 is mostly east of I-25. It includes Hill Rise, Desert Hills, University Hills, and White Sands K-8 schools, as well as Arrowhead Park and Centennial High School. Thanks so much for joining us.
Glad to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Bob is being challenged in this election by two opponents, Adriana Maria Garcia and Natalie R. Chadbourne. Both, as I said earlier, did respond to our invitation, but said that they had prior commitments. Adriana sent a brief statement, well, a statement that I will read a little bit of. She says, "My name is Adriana Maria Garcia. I'm honored to be running candidate running for school board in District 3. I'm certified as a human rights consultant through the U.S. Institute of Diplomacy and Human Rights, certified as a nutritionist through the International Sports Science Association, and currently work as a brand engagement strategist in marketing. Most importantly, I'm a mother who wants to bring both my professional experience and perspective as a parent to help strengthen schools." She talks about the importance of school safety. She says no child should ever go hungry in school, and she will advocate for policies to ensure every school, every student eats with dignity, regardless of income level. She says every student, including those with disabilities, special needs, or from marginalized communities, deserve equal access. And let's see, lastly here, she says she will listen to, advocate, and ensure our focus always remains on the success, safety, and well-being of every child in Las Cruces. So I wanted to just get a little bit out there to be fair to her. And thank you so much for joining us. Looking forward to the discussion.
Is there anything that she said that you folks aren't doing?
Well, perhaps you saw my nonverbal when she talked about nutrition for every kid and no more stigmas, because that we are doing now, and it's a very worthy goal. All children deserve the right to have to be well fed before they go into a classroom, and so the state of New Mexico and Las Cruces Public Schools have made sure that is happening. And the other issues are of concern that she brought up for Las Cruces Public Schools. And I'm sure we'll address those over the course of this morning.
Yeah, I was going to say, in terms of goals and aspirations, I don't think there's anything in there that anybody disagrees with. We are all striving for the same things. Why don't we start with school safety? Because that is an issue that is so much on people's minds. And it is, I think, a real balancing act, because we certainly don't want to traumatize the kids. We don't want to take the focus off of learning. And yet we're understanding that we're living in this time where schools have become a target. And so you have no choice but to take certain steps. And so how do you try to balance that? And what has the district done in the past few years to try to make our schools more safe?
Thanks for the question, because safety is of paramount concern. And when you said we don't want to traumatize the kids, what we want is to de-traumatize them as much as possible. Having come out of COVID and the history of school shootings in America over the past 25 years. And so one reason security is at the very top of our issue is because of our budget process, where we survey parents, teachers, students, the community, and school safety always rises to the very top of that. And this board had been addressing safety issues. We have made secure vestibules one of our top priorities. In fact, there's a tiny bit left in the bond issue that's coming up that will renovate two schools to make sure vestibules are safe and secure for students. We traded our old Raptor check-in procedure into Verkada, which is superior in several ways. One, there's a camera that people will walk through so we can see who is coming into our schools. The background check is very similar to the previous to make sure that the people who are entering our schools, adults I'm talking about, belong there, that they are able to pick up children, that there's a reason for them to be there. We've also made efforts to secure the perimeters of buildings which are not designed to be secure, many of our older schools.
Right.
And so we have an organization that just stops by and checks on security and gives us a report about do we have the doors locked as much as possible. We've made fencing a priority around schools and playgrounds as well. And then, you know, there's a new magnetron or a magnet security system that students come through every day, which has just been rolled out this year. And so, goodness, there have to be some problems with it in terms of pinch points and kids thinking they can arrive 30 seconds before class starts and get through the security. And so there's a learning curve there. In fact, we even had some administrators from central office helping at one point. And in part, that is because we need to have enough security personnel to make sure that system works and flows smoothly. And a student who was on the dais recently at a school board meeting reported from the student advisory committee that kids do have a sense of feeling safer there. We've had a significant decrease in vaping, for one thing, perhaps because kids know that if they bring that material through, they will be caught. And security across the board is a top concern for our board, just to make sure that that we are doing what we can to make the schools as safe as possible. God forbid a horrible incident might occur. We want to make sure we have done everything we can ahead of time to be ready for that.
Tougher problem, absenteeism.
Absolutely.
Where are you on that? Yeah, what is the situation and how can you guys do better?
Well, I loved your question. Where are you on that? Because I'm showing up. But the problem is many children are not. Our state, our nation has a significant absenteeism problem. We had 37% chronic absenteeism, with just 10% or more of the school year kids being gone. And if a child is not in a classroom, it is impossible to get through and teach that child. Mm-hmm. And so we need to look at the root causes of absenteeism, figure out why the kids are not there. And the causes are as many as there are children. Certainly there are systemic things in our society, economic, where kids are being asked to take care of younger siblings and not showing up for that reason. And there's certainly just the malaise of the high school teenager who thinks, I can get away with not being here. And so we want to come at it not from a punitive system, which some states have tried, but from a system of understanding the cause of that absenteeism and helping address those needs. One initiative we've done, and we've had a grant from the Public Education Department to do so the last 3 years, is to hire a significant number of interns. I believe we have 20 this year. Social workers work majors at NMSU who can spend the time to meet with kids, to do home visits, to review why the kids are being absent. We've also devoted full-time personnel to that task. In fact, I was talking with a teacher yesterday, day before, who said in her discovery of, you know, trying to help kids who are absent, it just runs the gamut, that there are kids who were traumatized by the Young Park incident. Yeah. They have family members or friends or others that has caused them to be absent. It is a systemic societal problem. It shows up in the schools because, well, it does. That's where the kids don't go. And so we are doing every effort we can to make sure that that we address that issue.
Different governors have taken different approaches to that issue, which I think is one of the problems with education in New Mexico. It's kind of a different subject. But mm-hmm. Bill Richardson scrapping a school board that would have continuity from one governor to the next, and now you have Bill Richardson has his agenda. Susana Martinez comes in with hers, and her agenda was very punitive. And on the issue of absenteeism, she saw that as truancy. And the way you solve that is with truancy officers who go pick up kids and take them to school. What are your thoughts about that approach, and what is the correct approach?
Well, the truancy officers there, I mean, there's some degree of kids who are just flat skipping. I'm sure that is true. But that is not the bulk of people. And so a punitive approach does not make sense. I thought you were going to mention a Florida or a Texas governor when you talked about it.
No, that happened here.
Oh, yes. I remember those days because after Bill Richardson got through the a constitutional amendment to reestablish our school boards as a cabinet position rather than elected position.
Right.
And, you know, you want a governor to have his or her agenda and be able to move forward. But I think that caused significant problems under Susana Martinez with Hannah Scandera.
Yep.
Because she came in with an attitude that we needed to overtest children and that they were somehow the enemy, as were teachers. Put into place was.
As were local school boards.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And put into place was a punitive evaluation system for teachers.
Yeah.
So that if we can destroy their morale, perhaps whip them into shape, they will do better. That was an utter and complete failure. And so with. Governor Lujan Grisham, we've had a series of education secretaries, and that also has proved a problem because there's a consistency, an institutional knowledge, a sense of where we've been and what has been put into place and how we want to move forward that a secretary of education can have in order to lead our state in a positive direction. A school district, a whole state, is an enormous cruise ship, and you don't turn it on a dime.
Right.
That's one thing I figured out very, very early and was told that before I was elected 4 years ago. But I worked on rowing that boat, and we are turning our school district into very positive positions. And so if we're changing secretaries of education too often, then we do not have that vision to lead us forward and the consistency to do it. Did I over-answer your question,
no,
Walt?
No, you can't. That's an impossibility.
All right.
How does your teaching experience inform your performance as a school board member?
You're talking about a very core part of who I am, Peter. I was a teacher at Las Cruces High School for 34 years. Retired in 2017.
What did you teach, by the way?
I taught English and taught pretty much everything in the English curriculum over those 34 years. Let me try creative writing. Let me try this level of English and that level of English. I did teach the advanced placement English literature for a great period of that time. And I also taught very struggling learners who were trying to figure out, well, how do you put sentences together to make an essay? And no matter what level of student I taught, what I figured out early on in my career is that I was not teaching English. I was teaching students. And you take them where they are and you help them to grow as much as possible. And that mindset informs my decisions as a school board member. We have so much thrown at public education about test scores, and they are an important measure. We had some special education test score data that we looked at just last night in the work session. But what you have to keep in mind is students are more than a single number or boiled down into a single statistic. And when we're trying to ready kids for workforce, for post-high school, the skills that they need are curiosity, creativity, resilience, the skills that will make them employable. And then they learn, you know, the aspects of the particular job. And so that is what has just informed my whole life. When I retired, I thought, well, retirement's going to be a kind of nice thing. I continued to consult for the College Board into retirement in advanced placement English literature. I teach teachers how to teach advanced placement English. And that professional development has given me a sense of the pulse of what is going on because I work with some very excellent teachers throughout this region and the U.S. And so after 4 years, I thought, there was a school board opening, called past school board representatives I knew, got their advice and thought, yes, I think this is worth a try for me. 2 years into my term, I thought, my word, this ship is not turning very quickly. But I have figured out that what we are doing is making a real difference in the lives of children, and that's across the board. The policies that this board has put into place have been or are being effective to try to make change. And just the tenor that we set, the knowledge that we want to empower teachers, the knowledge that this board supports, for instance, the collective bargaining agreement process, that we are not enemies with our employees, but that we are partners. And I have lived through the Hannah Scandera years when the tenor of the board or the tenor of the state was that we are enemies. And so I'm very happy to be on this board, very happy that Pamela Court is our president, and she is running for election, and that Patrick Nolan is our vice president, who is running unopposed. And I think we're doing great things as this board and can move forward.
Once again, we are talking with Bob Wofford. He is one of three candidates running for the Las Cruces School Board in District 3. One of the things that surprised me a little bit, you guys put out a survey a few months ago showing that there is now general support among parents and students for the year-round calendar, which surprised me a little bit because I remember how much pushback there was when you first put that out. People were saying this was going to disrupt family trips, and, you know, we always go see grandma every summer, and, you know, mm-hmm. getting it, and you don't want to disrupt family dynamics. But can you talk a little bit about how people have apparently come to accept that, and have you seen the kind of academic improvements that you'd hoped you'd seen when you put that in place?
Thanks for that question. You know the little book, Who Moved My Cheese? Anytime there is a change that happens, like, where's my cheese? We have changed what I'm used to. And as creatures of habit, we think, well, this is how it was and how it should be. Time in memoriam, world without end. And so when the board went to year-round schooling, it was trying to make sure that we didn't have as much summer learning loss as had been in the past, trying to make sure that students, teachers, employees had time for revitalization throughout the school year, that we had built in weeks in the fall and the spring for catching kids up, those types of ideas. I think the rollout had rough edges around it because we voted in March for a change that happened that July. Personally, I advocated for the vote that would change the calendar the following year, give people a good heads up. And so it's no surprise that people kind of like being off in October. People like that extended time. And the kids have had mixed reactions to it, though our last survey was very positive about the year-round school. And there are significant problems with institutes and whatnot happening in July and family vacations. But as we get used to it, I think it's going to be a very positive thing. One thing about New Mexico is we are out the first week of June, and so many schools in our nation start after Labor Day. And we have completed almost half a semester at this point by then. As an advanced placement teacher, I loved that I was able to teach starting earlier in the year, and our kids were done by the end of May, because that AP test was in May, and the teachers in New York or New Jersey, they had to teach until the end of June. And all that curriculum, I had had the chance to get in earlier.
Right.
And so from a teacher perspective, I liked an early start. And now as a board member, I think that it may cause some good results. It's very hard to know causation versus correlation. But the attitude of children and of parents, just the perception of how it's doing has improved. And so perception can become reality, even if we don't see a direct correlation to test score improvement.
Let me take off from something you said about creativity being what people need, you know, curiosity, because that's also what you need at the beginning to be a, you know, student who learns anything. And as I see it, kids, you know, from the moment they can look around or speak or hear, are learning machines. That's their inherent job description, is learn all I can about this planet and you know, what can I touch that won't burn me, and, you know, mm-hmm. all that sort of everything. And then schools destroy that. Mm. I know you're kind of nodding.
You saw the nonverbal. Yeah.
Not, yeah. You're
not an absolutist position not, you're taking.
Nodding in a way that, you know, understandably doesn't share my feeling. And, you know, I'll excuse schools in advance by saying, you know, they got to deal with so many at a time that that maintaining order becomes a top priority of necessity. So I'm not blaming teachers. But what do you say to somebody who says, well, first of all, do you agree there's a tendency of schools, even well-intentioned, to kind of cut off kids' creativity? And what are you doing about that?
That's a very interesting and very broad question, Peter, because, yes, I agree to some extent that it's very difficult to have a flourishing creativity each child learning individually type of elementary school format and to carry that on because we do group kids into large numbers of students. The ideal pupil-teacher ratio is not what we have in public schools, right. But that's where the funding is and that's what we can do. And so as much as possible, what we've attempted to do as a board is to make sure that the professional development we have for teachers fits the best learning modalities, the best learning techniques we can have to make sure that kids have that sense of them being valued themselves, that respect for kids as individual, and that it's not just putting them into boxes and getting them out the other end that is what's critical. I alluded earlier to kids not being a simple test score, and that is most true in elementary school. When we overstress them with the here's the very important test, then that stymies or stifles what you were talking about as well. And so I am pleased to see that approach has abated, that we are not so focused on getting a test evaluation out of them and making them chew their nails down to nubs. But you've asked a question that's impossible to answer. That's
part of my job.
Yes, and we do what we can to make sure those kids are valued and can grow, and we attempt to take them at whatever level they are, and set goals that are designed for their individual abilities. Not so much. I mean, in New Mexico, you know, the pointing fingers and saying test scores is a common thing with us, and we should have fingers pointed at us. But what we also need to see is that a child who enters elementary or kindergarten without knowing her colors, or her numbers, or ABCs, that child is welcome, and that child can grow from whatever level she arrived at to wherever they get. And so we start with that, we end with this level, and we start there again the following year. The school district has instituted more formative assessments as opposed to these summative, all-important tests. I can remember high school kids in the all-important tests that took over several days sitting there going, weebada, weebada, I don't care. You know, I was assigned this part of the alphabet, and I said, guys, this is important. This is how we're being evaluated right now. But that intrinsic sense of, oh, a test is important, is not in our students. And so what we have are a series of beginning of year tests, middle of year tests, and end of year assessments. And the beginning of year assessment always shows a great need because we are assessing them at end of year criteria. And so we find a smaller percentage of kids have met the end of year criteria at the beginning of the year. But when we assess them again in mid year, teachers get that data right away, and then when we assess them at end of year, we can see, I believe it was 60% of our kids made their growth goals in both math and English in the past year. So They have made growth goals. We are making improvement. When you hold it up against NAEP standards, then it does not come through there. But we are not turning these kids away. We're accepting them where they are and taking them as far as we can.
We are down to our last couple of minutes. We've been talking with Bob Wofford. He is a candidate running for School District 3. We don't have enough time to cover this completely, but I did want to at least touch on the issue of the school libraries and books that some members of our community believe are not appropriate for the age levels or... Like I said, we've only got a minute or two to get through that, but go ahead and tell people.
Forgive me for talking
like
too much, because I also wanted to talk about the bond issue. Yeah. I want to talk about the immigration crisis we're in the middle of. Yeah. What we are doing to students in America right now is unconscionable. Parents who drop kids off afraid
to do so. We talked about that earlier.
Yeah, students who are afraid to come to school. And bottom line is that a library is a repository for all books. And when they argue it needs to be age appropriate means is the reading level stretching a kid's conceptual abilities to grow. Because you don't want kids who are reading at a fifth grade level to be just consuming second and first grade reading material. You want age appropriate to be a growth of academics.
But content isn't?
Content is up to individual parents if they do not want their children to read certain books. We have a policy, KEC, which allows parents to opt out of reading material for the kids they don't want. And so any parent can do that. What truly bothers me about what's going on is that a certain group of parents want to assert their values over other parents' choices. And if they don't want their kid to be reading a certain author or what have you, that is just fine. But they should not keep other kids and their parents from reading what they're able to.
Agreed.
Nobel laureates.
Let me interrupt you and give you 1 minute to say whatever you want to say about the bond issue.
I would say that that bond issue is critical to the success of our schools. The big money project in the current bond issue, which, by the way, will not increase anyone's taxes. Mm-hmm. We are bonding at the same tax rate that we have for years. And that largest chunk of money is going to the beginning of the Mayfield High School rebuilding. When Centennial and Cruces High came on some years ago, they cost about $100 million. Right now, Mayfield is projected over the next 8 to 10 years to cost $200 million based on the inflation and tariffs and everything that's caused them to go up. And so that's the big ticket issue. But, you know, about 5 or 6 playgrounds are going to be refurbished at elementary schools, and we're going to have roofs and HVAC systems. So across the board, capital outlay bond issue is the only way to make these needed repairs and maintenance.
Okay. We once again, we've been talking with Bob Wofford. He is running for school district in District 3.